Session number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, Reel 14.
Mr. Ray, Reel 14. We're talking about the period when you were, between your service, when you were back in civilian life.
Yes.
You got married then as well, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, I married a girlfriend I corresponded with while I was in India. And I knew her for quite a long while before I joined the army, really.
And did you have any worries about the war, about a war? Were you aware of what was going on in Germany or Hitler or anything?
Oh, of course I was. Actually, it was in the back of my mind not to get married, you know, because the war was looming so close. Anyway, the young woman, she'd waited quite a long time, you see, and we did get married, and that was all right.
You thought the war would involve you then, being in the Army Reserve, that you'd be called up?
Oh, yes. I was aware of what was happening. I knew I'd have to go back in the event of war breaking out.
What do you remember about the outbreak of war and your call up then?
Well, it was a very sad affair. I hadn't been home very long. And married and settled down. And there's a wheel. And eventually,
did you hear the actual announcement, or were you called up before Chamberlain's speech?
Yes, I heard it.
What did you think?
Oh, God Almighty. Got to go back to it now. I wonder what will happen. The real issue started. Yeah. Eventually, the papers came through on the Friday morning. I had to report to Fenham Barracks, back to the old training ground. I'd met a warrant for travelling and a lunch voucher for food. And on the Friday morning, I went down to the manager's office and I told him what had happened. And he shook hands with me and he said, "Well, your job will be open when you return, Jim, and good luck, best of luck anyway." And then went back home, put a few things together and said goodbye, caught the bus, straight through to Newcastle.
And what sort of state was Fenham in, Fenham Barracks? Because there's a lot going on, I presume.
Chaotic. All the fellows that I knew, they all on the reserve, they all came back. There were streamers and putties and things flying, and we issued with a khaki uniform again. And they still had the straight jackets and the buttons at the front, you know, the ancient dress putties. And one pair of boots, two pair of socks and all that sort of thing came back into...
So it's just like you've been issued when you first joined the army?
Yes, yeah.
And wasn't it a bit overcrowded?
To prevent overcrowding, as soon as you got kitted out, and we moved more or less into the centre of the city. I was in a chapel, as a matter of fact, a small chapel. And that was full. Even the balcony on the top, you see, that was full as well. And then we didn't have much time. Everything was quick, you see. We were only there for about 24 hours. And off again, the way down walking. Went back down to... what the name's place again? Down there? I did mention it before.
I thought it was Woking. But
yes, Woking. Inkerman Barracks it was. Yeah, Inkerman Barracks.
And what was your reception there? I mean, did you go back to the Bugles and the headquarters company, or were you put in?
Yes, I went. I went back into Bugles headquarters company. Yes.
So you are still a bugler?
Yes.
Yeah. And had the unit changed at all? I mean, when you got there, as far as you could see, or was it just? I mean, it's only a year later, really.
Oh,
it didn't.
It hadn't changed much. No. We had to settle in the barracks, and we went. The bugles were the instrument, the bugle. They were all packed away. We didn't carry any more bugles then, you know. We were soldiers.
They were a peacetime thing.
Pardon?
They were a peacetime.
Oh, yes. Yes, peacetime.
So what was the point of you being a bugler?
All the band instruments, they were packed away as well and stacked away, you know, put away carefully.
So did they keep the bugle section, or were you dispersed amongst the companies then?
No, we kept the bugle section as a protective, as I said before, it was a protection of the CO.
And you weren't long in England, I know, but did you do any training or anything special before you left for France?
Well, in the time I'd been in reserve, there was a general overhaul in the army. As a matter of fact, it became mechanised, fully mechanised, you see.
And that was new to you, was it?
That was new to me. And
what had come in then?
Pardon?
In what way had it mechanised? How far had it gone?
Well, they had the Bren gun. I'd never seen a Bren gun in my life till I came back. So we had to practice with that one.
Well, let's look at that first. So what did you think of the Bren gun as a machine gun?
Very good.
Machine gun?
Oh, it was marvellous.
Was it better than the Lewis?
Definitely.
In what ways?
Less stoppages, light to carry, magazine was easy to fill, quicker to fill, it had a good firepower, flash eliminator on, didn't have there was no cooling system on it like the Lewis gun. Straightforward, it's easy to strip down quickly and put back together again. You could do it in a couple of minutes flat.
And it was as accurate?
Accurate.
So in almost every way, it seems.
Oh, yes, a bit an improvement.
Was there any way you preferred the Lewis? I mean, was there anything you both thought was better about the Lewis?
No, I think it. The Lewis was an obsolete. It was all right for the time. For what it was designed for. Over the years, but the Bren gun, it was a smasher.
So we were talking about that's one new thing. What about the mechanisation? What had come in there?
Well, we had more transport.
What type?
From personal utility to four tonners.
So lorries?
And lorries, yes.
So would the whole battalion travel by lorry?
Oh, yes. You could, yes.
So if you were going from A to B, you'd go by lorry?
You could go by lorry, yes.
So you had your own drivers and everything?
We had our drivers, yes.
And that was all new?
And then we had Bren gun carriers as well. They were like have you seen a Bren gun carrier? Yes, we had a Bren gun carrier section as well. We had a mortar company. I think that's about as much as I can talk about that one anyway.
That's the new thing.
Yes.
So you would try.
We had the boys' anti-tank rifle.
Now what did you think of that? Or what did you think of it before you tried to use it? Well, you know, when you first were introduced to it, what did you think of it then?
Well, I just looked at it as another weapon to be used, and I fired it, and had a hell of a kick. There used to be a lot of laugh about it, like, you know, and get back. What did we left the gun for? The kick. AP shells.
So, anything else about your time in England? You were still with the headquarters company,
yes.
The Protective Platoon.
Yes.
Was that what it was called, the Protective Platoon?
Well, it was headquarters anyway. Yeah.
And you were in them when you went overseas, because you joined A Company later, didn't you?
Yes.
Right. We'll come to that then.
Yes.
So, anything else happened while you were in England?
No, I don't think so. No, not when the war broke out.
Right.
No. Everybody was shook up, of course, and I think my wife now, she could tell you it really happened when our brothers went in the army, same as myself, because she had brothers away as well, you see. Some of them in the territorials and some went in, you know. And I think there'll be a general issue of coupons and things like that, Russian books and stuff that issued straight away by the government.
So on the 23rd of September, you went to France.
Yes.
What do you remember about the trip over? Because it's, you know, it's only a short trip, but I mean, you were actually going to war this time, uh-huh. as opposed to going to India or Sudan. How was it organised, the crossing?
Very well. Very well organised. Because you had, in wartime, everything is regulated. And you had the harbour masters, you had the ships ready for you, you had the RTOs directing, you had military police directing, and we went on board the boat. I can't tell you what boat it was, really, because everything was blacked out, you know. And we crossed the channel, and
were you protected during the crossing? I mean, the escorts and things.
Well, yes, we protected. Yeah, more by the Navy.
Were you nervous at all?
Eh?
Yourself about what might happen? I mean, that you might
not
come back, that sort of thing.
No, I was very complacent at the time.
And where did you get to in France? Where did you land?
We landed at Boulogne.
What were your first impressions of France? Because it's the first time, you know, the landing and how the people responded.
Well, to tell you the truth, Pete, we didn't have time for impressions because we were on the move, you see. But it looked all right. I mean, the coastal towns were quite clean. Of course, the different language was over that side of the channel entirely. And the French port authorities, they were very helpful, and they organized transport at that side. And after, well, we snatch food, you know, tea, like, you know what I mean, where we could get it, you know, a bit disorderly organisation there, getting a bit of grub and then getting on the train. But the trains were like what they used to use during the war, like cattle trucks, 12 horses or 24 men. All that was all still printed on there, you know. Where they got them from, I do not know. But it was the same kind of transport as we're using in World War One, you know. And pretty rough journey, really, till we got to.
Why was it rough? Just
We crowded in there, you know. If you could sit down, you were all right. But we had all equipment and rifles and things, steel helmets, gas masks. That was bulky to carry, you know. And some used to stand up, let others sit down. You know, just take turns. And rattling and bumping, you know, and real old time.
How long did the journey last for?
Well, we went to a place called Lille, that's where we went. Then we went out in the countryside from Lille, and the battalion itself was in different sections, different areas around, you see.
In the Lille area?
Lille area, yes. And we were out at a place called Flins-la-Roche. That was in the countryside.
That was the headquarters company?
Yeah.
And were you in billets?
Well, we were found billets. Our billet was at this time, I was a full corporal. I was made a full corporal when I rejoined the battalion. It was a barn on a farm. The ACAC, they were billeted in there. It was only a small unit, you see. And the transport, that was separated. Hidden round by the barns, you see. We had an officer, I forget his name, lieutenant, and he was in charge of the HQ transport.
So you were in this barn. What was it like?
Not too bad. It was quite clean. We were able to have a fire because. Getting cooler in September.
Was there any straw or anything for bedding? I mean,
oh yes, we had to be very careful. We got the straw where we had to lie down, you know.
And what about the farmers, French farmers?
Oh, they were all right, excellent. Yes.
They treated you well.
Yes.
What did they do for you?
Well, they helped us with sort of asked us if there's anything they could do to make us comfortable as possible. There's plenty of potatoes. If you wanted any potatoes, we could have them, you know, surplus. One thing I didn't like about it, the water, it was all pumped from wells with like a pump the cow handle on, you know, to pump the water like it. And in one particular instance, we used to get a fresh water issue, and that water used to come from the railway station in big oval tanks, water transporter tanks, you know. That was all right. But when that was like a delivery, every you know, we used to fill it up in 4 gallon. Empty petrol cans, the fresh water. Of course, we cleaned out, you know. We used to have our water in there, fresh water from the tank.
So what was wrong with the well water?
Well, I suspected it because the farmyard itself was in like a square. Now, you had the cow buyers on one side, you had the piggery on another side, and so forth, you see. And the courtyard into the centre of the farmyard, it used to slope down, and there's a great big, like a sump, circular sump. Now, all the urine and all that from the animals used to go in there, you see, into that part. But the farmers, they used that sludge, you know, for the fields. They used to grow a tremendous amount of sugar beet. And of course, cereal crops as well. But the pump where we used to get the water wasn't very, very, very far from that sump. And naturally, a sump, if it's not lined, brick lined, you know, to a certain depth, there's seepage in there, bound to be, underground. And actually, the seepage would go to the well where the pump was. So I had my doubts about this, and I talked to the officer in charge. I said, excuse me, sir, I said, this water, I said, we boil it. We don't drink it fresh. We boil it for tea and stuff right now. But so, well, that was a good precaution anyway, to sterilise contaminated water, boil it. So he thought a bit, and I said, it's worthwhile talking to the MO about it and have the water tested. And he got it tested anyway. And he said, well, it's a good job he's not drinking that water, he says, because it's bloody polluted. It's just by the sheer fact that we were boiling the water for making char, you know, brewing up, and we were using the other water for drinking. But anybody unsuspecting could have, you know, drank it, and God knows what would have happened.
Now, what about your food, your rations? How were they distributed to you? I mean, because it's not like when you're a nice big barrack with a big bunkhouse and fresh. How was your food issue during this period at Flint's?
Oh, very well. The ration supplies came up, but we used to get like a McConaughey's beef stew, and you could stew that yourselves, you know, you could do that on your own.
In a tin?
In a tin, a large tin. You took the top off and you could put it in your mess tins and heat it up. And
that was individual rations or for a couple of you?
Oh, yes, individuals.
So you get one tin and that was your meal?
That the meal, yes, and we had biscuits, same square biscuits, you know.
The ones that are like dog biscuits?
Yeah.
What were they like? Had you had them before?
Oh, yes. They're all right when you're hungry. Of course, you could steep them and get them softened up a bit, you know, and get them down that way.
What other rations would you get?
Well, you used to get a bread issue once a week, and that was a great big round brown loaf with a big number carved in, and the number was four. Number four. You know, but before it was baked.
But so it was a number four loaf sort of thing?
Could have been, or the bakery.
What else? Was your cookhouse going at Flins La Roche? I mean, was there a company, or a headquarters company cookhouse?
No. Everybody got the rations.
So all your rations were brought up?
Yes.
Anything else then? Were they still having bully beef?
Like yes, corned beef, plenty of that, plenty of corned beef. Used to get margarine, oxo in small round tins, oxo. The sugar was local, squares, you get local sugar. Milk was tinned, same, this was all shipped, our supplies, you know. Carnation, Libby's milk. Tinned rice pudding, jam. I think that was about it.
So, did you get enough food?
Yes.
And was it, the quality was all right, was it?
Yes, it was all right, yes.
And you didn't get, did you get bored with it always being the same?
No. No, we didn't get bored.
So that's food. What about keeping clean, washing and shaving? Were you able, what arrangements were made at the farm?
Well, we made our own arrangements. We used to go to the pump and pump the water out in big metal basins. I think that the farmers used to use that as well for a wash, pump the water in. We used to, if you wanted to shave, anything like that, well, we used to use the tea that was left over. Use that and sling it out.
What about the latrines?
Now, the latrines, even in France, you've got a bog. It's like a little hut. Have you seen them in westerns, films? Cars, you like that. Just a big pit, deep pit dug, and framework over the top. All enclosed with a door in, you know. You go in there, that was the toilet.
And but would you put some extra ones up? Because there wouldn't be enough at the farm, would there?
Oh, yes. The pit was deep enough, but it wasn't half a pong.
There'd be no... So you were able to keep clean and everything else during that period.
Yes.
Now, while you were at Flynn La Roche, what were you doing?
Well, we built anti-aircraft defence positions.
What for?
Aircraft attack.
What were you defending against, though? Do you see what I mean?
The farm in particular and the headquarters. The headquarters as well.
How did you go about digging anti-aircraft defences? I mean, what was the scheme?
Well, first of all, we had to put them in strategic places, you know, for roll-round protection.
Who decided that? Who would decide that?
The company commander. And the remarkable thing about it was, when we started using the spade, used to go down about 2'6", and you used to get water. Water used to come up. No. So we had to overcome that problem. We couldn't have a bathing a pool of water to stand in. So we dug the trench, filled that one in, not a trench, it was a circular pit, because we had a brain gun on a tripod for anti-aircraft defence.
So it was just a big hole. I mean, an anti-aircraft position was just a big hole, was it?
Wait a minute, I'll explain.
Sorry.
Yes. We dug so far down before the water seepage came in. Then we got sandbags, and we filled the sandbags up with as much rubble as we could from the earth we'd removed. And we got empty petrol cans, cut out the tops, filled them full of rubble and all that, and we built those around in a circle and the sandbags and built it up from the level we'd gone down. So it gave us plenty of protection right round.
So you went down about 2 foot, say,
yes,
instead of 2.5 foot.
That's right.
Stopped while it was dry.
That's right.
Then built up like a wall.
Built up a circular wall.
And what was your total protection then?
About
2 foot plus?
About 3 feet, 3 feet six. 3 feet six.
So you'd build up about 1 foot six, 2 foot on top
of that. 2 foot on top of that, yes.